Well, good morning again. If you are a guest or you just flat out forgot, I am Pastor Kirby. I am one of your pastors here at Living Hope. It's truly a joy and an honor to be back with you, and we're just happy and excited that we get to spend this hour or so, whatever it is, with you. And excited to hear of the different things God is doing in your life. A couple announcements real quick before we jump into things. Next week, we start a new series called The Clearing. And we're going to be talking about what is worship. What do we mean when we say worship? A lot of times we get it confused or overcomplicated. So we're going to start that next week. But also next week, is our block party. It's our fall kickoff. It's where we're going to kick off all the fall activities and events and things of that nature. And there is only one service next week, 10:30 a.m. Next week, 10:30 a.m. on September 9th at 10:30 a.m. What time? Good. You have no excuse. You have each told me what time. So we'll see you next week at 10:30. Afterwards, we're going to have some food. We're going to have some games. It's going to be a great time. So bring your friend, bring your enemy. It doesn't matter. It's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you come. And in your bulletin, you'll see that flyer of all the small groups, all the life groups that are happening and getting launched. We really encourage you to get connected with one of those. And we've got some more coming. We'll probably switch them at times. And so get connected. Get supported, get encouragement, learn a little bit. It's going to be a great time, and so we encourage you to get connected with those. If you need more information, contact the church office. You can find us on the website, whatever you need. But we're really, really happy that you're here. If you're online, we're happy that you're here. Thanks for tuning in, and we're continuing and wrapping up our series called Happy. And we're looking at the Beatitudes of Jesus. The Beatitudes were these eight phrases, these eight sentences, and eight statements at the beginning of what's called the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount covers Matthew 5, 6, and 7. So Jesus kicks it off with these challenges, these phrases. Okay, so that's what we've been looking at over the last several weeks. If you've missed anything, you can go to lhwc.org, catch up on all the sermons if you wish to do that. But naturally, as we've been going over this series called Happy, I couldn't help but reflect on the things that make me happy, the things that make me sad, right? And I've been thinking about this, and let's get the negative out of the way first. The things that make me sad, okay? We'll talk about that. So naturally, the things that make me sad. First, I've only been able to golf twice this summer. That makes me really sad. Really does. I know none of you feel any pity for me, and I get that. But that makes me sad. My wife and I like to watch a TV show called The Voice, and Alicia Keys is no longer a judge this year. That kind of makes me sad. I think we can all relate to this one. Makes me sad that the Yankees and Red Sox will both be in the playoffs. That makes me really sad. No? Nobody else? This is a tough crowd today. Jesus help. The things that make me happy. Maybe, let's not think of that, but what else makes us happy? Maybe ladies, you can relate to this. My wife will come home and she'll say, "Oh, I really need a pedicure." So she'll go and get her people touch her feet and do her nails, do all this stuff, like sand her feet. I don't get that. But they do all this stuff, and she comes home and she's like, "Oh, that was awesome. People touched my feet so well," and they love it, right? And her toes are pretty. She loves it. So she's happy. My Indians are probably going to win the AL Central, so that makes me happy. Boy, you guys are. Andrew, you ready to preach yet? No, kidding. But these things, we have good meals. We see a good show. We have good experience. We have all these good things in our lives, but eventually they come to an end. Eventually that we're going to have to eat again. And the taste in our mouth wears off. Eventually, my wife is going to have to spend more money to get people to touch her feet again because it feels good. If the happiness wears off, and we've been talking about that. We've been talking about that happiness. We can't allow happiness to be based on an experience. We can't allow happiness to be based on a happening, right? And where is true happiness and joy found? Happiness and joy. Jesus gives us several things, and they're found in Matthew chapter 5. And we're going to get to what we're going to talk about today, but I want to recap in case you haven't been here or in case you forgot. I want to give you a recap of where we've been. So week one, we talked about happiness is a choice. You can choose happiness based on God's way. You can choose to be happy and you can choose to live in God's kingdom, or you can choose to live in your own muddy backyard and not and live with that consequence. Week two, we talked about you're happy when you choose to be real. When you choose to be authentic, you're going to be humble. You're going to choose to be happy because you're not carrying around the baggage all by yourself. You're going to bring other people into your life that can support you and encourage you and love you. Week three, we said happiness is when we love God and love others. That verticalness is when we're right with God, that vertical love. And there's a horizontal love is when we're right with our neighbor and when we love other people. Week four says we're happy when we forgive. This was a challenging one. This was a tough one. But the reality is we've all been on the receiving end and the giving end of unforgiveness. And we all know the burden and weight that carries. And so we said we're happy when we forgive. And then last week we talked about happiness as a result of being pure in heart. And we looked at David and his impurity and the actions that he took and what it took to get back with God. And when he did, God restored him and made him a man after his own heart. It was awesome. But this morning, our beatitude can be summed up in one phrase. And that phrase is, happy are those who live what they believe. Happy are those who live what they believe. Jesus says, here's how you can find happiness. When you choose to be happy, when you're real, when you're loving, when you're forgiving, and when you're pure. And really, all of these principles, they're not earth-shattering, they're not rocket science, but it goes against everything our culture tells us to do, everything our culture tells us where we can find happiness. Happiness is having an elite physical body. Happiness is having the shiny car. Happiness is having the perfect relationship. Happiness is more and more. Happiness XYZ. That's happiness. That's what the world tells us is happiness. Jesus says, those things aren't bad, but it won't bring true happiness. Jesus says, you want to be happy. You want to have a fulfilled life. Here are some ways that you need to do it. But here's the challenge for all of us. When we choose this, when we choose God's way, when we choose to pursue this, life becomes challenging. We don't like that. But when we pursue Christ, when we pursue the living this way, like Christ is called, life can be a challenge, which is hard because we spend so much time trying to be comfortable, trying to make our lives easier. A lot of times our goal is that we give our kids a better life than we had. My parents have told me that a number of times. We just want you to have a better life and have it easier than we did. You got to respect that as a parent. But that's what we focus on so much, is just having a better life. But eventually, that stuff will end. How can we do that? So when we pursue Christ, we are swimming upstream. We are going backwards. We're fighting against what society tells us true happiness is. So here we go. Let's look at the last beatitude. The last beatitude that he gave us, the last beatitude we'll look at. It's found in Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. Blessed are those who are persecuted. This is starting off really well. Because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil things against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way that they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You know, another thing we learned about during the sermon is that blessed is synonymous with happy. So it says, be happy when you're persecuted. Be happy when you face ridicule. No. I like the other weeks better. See, forgiveness, I can understand that. I can kind of wrap my head around it. It's not easy, but I can understand it. This one doesn't make any sense to me. Jesus is saying, hey, you should be happy when people insult you. Like, what? If you're our guest, our kids' ministry kicked off, so that's what you're hearing. You should be happy when you're ridiculed on behalf of Jesus. Jesus is like a Debbie Downer here. He goes through all of these things and just gives us this little motivational pep talk. guess what? You should be happy when people make fun of you. It's interesting to think that Jesus says we can. That's where we can find it, isn't it? Why would he say we can be happy, we can find fulfillment when we're persecuted, when we're being bullied, when we're being ridiculed and criticized? But I'll say this. When we choose to follow Jesus, when we say yes to him, you will be criticized. You will be insulted. And maybe let me say this as lovingly as I can, because I'm speaking to myself. If you are a follower of Jesus, not everybody in here may be, and I get that, but if you are, if you've chosen and decided to follow Jesus, you should be experiencing a little bit of ridicule in your life for him. I don't like that idea at all. That doesn't make me happy in any way possible. See, for years, I have done everything I can not to stir up conflict. I don't want people to think negatively of me. I don't want people to argue. I don't feel like getting engagement in negative things. I did everything I could to be cordial. I didn't want to say anything that would upset the system, that upset this relationship, upset anybody or offend anybody. And so I avoided all of that stuff. Occasionally, I'd sprinkle in a nice, cute little religious saying just so people would know that I'm still following Jesus, but that's about it. I did everything I could to avoid insult and ridicule. But Jesus said, blessed or happy are those who receive that. See, the problem is I hold those interactions very tightly, and I pretty much don't sleep at night. And so it's hard for me, and it's been a journey and some sleepless nights. But the reality is Jesus says, you're happy and blessed when that happens, when you stand up for me. So, but let's be honest here. In context of this passage, we're not facing the same ridicule. Nobody's walking in those doors and says, oh, you're talking about Jesus, you're going to be executed, literally beheaded or something. That is not happening, right? I mean, we live in Madison, South Dakota in the United States of America. That's not happening. But the reality is around this world, that does happen still. That's a sad reality. I want to give you a website. This website tells story after story about people who have experienced this on a daily basis. It's called opendoorsusa.org. Opendoorsusa.org. It's a website that talks about all around the world, the persecution, actual persecution of the people. There were people in Jesus' time who were dying for their faith, literally being martyrs. And they had this perception of Jesus. They wanted Jesus to come and overthrow the government and revolutionize the world through government. And the people were saying, yes, go take out Rome and be our king. Jesus didn't come to revolutionize the government, which still applies today. He came to revolutionize our hearts and our minds. That's why in the Beatitudes, he says these sayings that are so easy, but they're so difficult to live out. Because persecution, especially in America, doesn't look like it did back then. But Jesus, even last week we talked about it, Jesus says to the followers of him, they said, or the believers of God says, you know what, you look great on the outside. You look like a tomb, a grave that looks beautiful on the outside. It's painted, it looks really nice, but on the inside, you're utterly dead. There's nothing in you that reflects me. You're just a whitewashed tomb. So he doesn't want us to become this holier-than-thou, get a complex in our head, but he wants us to stand in a place where we understand that if we are going to do that, we're going to face something that might not make us happy. When you do that, persecution is going to follow. You know, frankly, I don't know if people would hire Jesus to be a motivational speaker nowadays, frankly. But did you know, so the 12 apostles, now these apostles were those guys, you know, in that painting that we look at all the time. They were the closest to Jesus. These 12 men were the closest to Jesus, and there were women in there. But these 12 apostles, out of the 12, 11 of them were martyrs. They were executed. Some were beheaded. Some were crucified. Some were hung. Some had spears thrown through them. All because they professed Jesus. 11 of the 12. We're not in that area, right? We're not afraid of that. We're not going to get beheaded. But it flies in the cultural idea of everything we believe in America. When Jesus says, there's going to be challenging days ahead of you when you follow me. When you profess my name, there's going to be challenging days. You're going to have hard times. I don't like that. Because even in our founding documents, it says we are given the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. From the beginning and founding of this country, it has been a goal of this country to pursue happiness. Jesus is saying happiness looks different than what you're thinking. So flip the scripts. So we're going to face obstacles. What are these obstacles in the 21st century? They all look different, but they all hurt, right? So what happens when we face these obstacles, when we face persecution? It hurts, right? The first way it's going to hurt is it hurts when people persecute you. It hurts when people persecute or insult you. They're going to persecute and insult you for what you believe. People will try to insult you with words. We can all think the times we've been attacked. People have attacked us with words. They've called us names. They've ridiculed us. All of this stuff. And frankly, we've done the same thing to other people, right? And they hurt. It hurts us in the midst of it when people insult you. Maybe it's indirect. They say, oh, you follow Jesus, God. Well, if your God is all-knowing, all-powerful, he sure has let this world go to pot. It sure is a big mess. You'd think if he was under control, he could take care of that, right? Or, oh, you follow Jesus. Well, religion is just a crutch for the weak, right? So there's indirect insults on our lives. It may not be that direct thing right at us, but they're going to be tough. They're going to be hurtful. The next way is that people will ridicule you. Passage says they'll insult you and they'll ridicule you. To me, it's very similar to an insult, but it's more of a ganging up. It's more of a kind of a attack as a group, right? So we say, hey, oh, you're a follower of Jesus. So let's say when we mess up and make a mistake, and we will, and you will continue to do so, and that's where grace and mercy comes in. It's pretty awesome. But here's the deal. When you do that, there's other people who will say, oh, I thought you were a Christian. And Christians don't do that. I thought Christians weren't supposed to do that, right? And so they're going to ridicule, they're going to attack you, they're going to attack your character because they're going to hold you to something, right? And that hurts, and we hold it personal, and a lot of times we'll retreat. Another way that it hurts us is that people will lie about you. They'll make up stories. This happened to Jesus. They put a sign on the cross that said, King of the Jews. I said, Jesus, we're going to hang you. First, we're going to spit on you. We're going to whip you. We're going to beat you. And then we're going to put the sign up that says, King of the Jews, because it's a joke. You said you were going to come and you were going to be a king and you were going to overthrow. That's a joke. Look at you. You're dying. People said that Jesus had affairs with many women, that Jesus was the devil himself. People created lies about Jesus. People will create lies about you and attack your character. That hurts, absolutely hurts. When you face persecution, you're going to face insults. Someone lies for your faith. It's kind of like this. Okay, Jesus, I confess to you, I give you my life. Be the Lord of my life. And we start to come to worship every week, and we start to grow in our faith. We're reading our Bibles. We're connected in a small group. We're growing daily in our faith. Every single day, we're growing a little bit more. And then at school or at work, you're around your family or your friends, something happens. And they start to get you. And they start to attack you. And they start to criticize you. And you're doing your best, though. You're trying to live in purity and forgiveness and honesty. And then someone rejects you. Says, oh, yeah, you follow that Jesus, whatever. And they reject you personally because of a faith. That hurts. That hurts absolutely deeply. And they say, oh, Living Hope, oh, yeah, they're just a bunch of wackos. Well, I can't speak for all of you, but But they attack you. They attack you personally. Religion is for the weak-minded, right? You can't have any fun being a Christian. And they reject you personally. That hurts. Social media is like a global hand grenade over keyboards. You don't know anybody on the other side, or even if you do, but especially if you don't know them, you just say whatever you want. You hurl insults, and they hurl them back without fear of repercussion because they don't know you. You don't know them. It doesn't matter. But if they disagree with you, by golly, I'm going to let them know. And it happens all the time. People are ridiculed and insulted. There have been literal people literally committed suicide because of the attacks they've received on social media by people who don't know them. Living Hope, I ask and pray that we would be different. That we would not go to that place. So how do we do that? When Jesus says, no, when you face persecution, you should be happy. But those are not happy things. Those are not things that really get me out of bed in the morning. I don't look forward to say, ooh, I'm looking forward to somebody getting on me today. Right? That doesn't get me excited. But Jesus says, you're happy when you're persecuted, when you're blessed. How are we going to respond when there's social media grenades thrown at us, when people criticize us at our job, when people in our family reject us for a faith? How are we going to respond? The first way we're going to respond, we're going to respond with kindness. If you respond by giving them a throat punch, probably not good. But if you respond angrily, if you respond in a way that is attacking, a lot of times what you're doing is you're feeding that perception and that idea to them that all Christians react or act in a certain way. But it's nature, a lot of times. Look, if somebody attacks me, I want to get him back. I want to defend myself, right? I want to attack them. But Proverbs chapter 25 says this about love and our actions. It says, if your enemies are hungry, give them food to eat. If they are thirsty, give them water to drink. It didn't say, hey, if your enemies are hungry, go tip their plate over. If their enemies are thirsty, go get a Gatorade and drink right in front of them. No, it says if they're hungry, feed them. If they're thirsty, give them water. And it says this, you will heap burning coals of shame on their heads and the Lord will reward you. So you show kindness, the kindness that actually burns or stings or brings something about inside of them. They're like, that was a different response than what I was expecting. And I love this phrase, and maybe your mama told you this a long time ago. Kill them with kindness. Anybody heard that one? Kill them with kindness. No, I want to kill them with a tree falling on their head, right? But kill them with kindness. It's this overwhelming sense that we respond out of that. And I believe that's what Jesus wanted us to do when he's telling us, blessed are you, happy are you when you're persecuted. 1 Peter tells us this. You've already put in your time in that God-ignorant way of life, partying night after night. A drunken and profligate, I hate that word, life. Now it's time to be done with it for good. Of course, your old friends don't understand why you don't join in with the old gang anymore, but you don't have to give an account to them. They're the ones who will be called on the carpet and before God. The passage says you used to live like this, now you're going to live like this. They're not going to understand it. They're not going to like it. They're going to reject it. But this is the way to go. When you're treated this way, our first temptation is to fight back, right? Nobody puts baby in a corner, right? Our first action, our first response, I got to fight. I got to get out of this. And there's going to be a time and a place where you will have to defend your faith. The apostle even tells us that. Be ready to give an account. And so there will be a time and a place. But what would happen if we would not respond in that anger? Because I think oftentimes Christians really don't do a good job of this. I think oftentimes we are the worst people on social media to throw grenades. And we are the worst people, even in life, to be the first one to judge and ridicule somebody and insult people for not doing what we believe they should be doing. What if we were a group that was known for what we were about, what we stood for? instead of what we were stood against? What if we were that group that people knew us by? There's a great hymn that says, they'll know we are Christians by our love. It's a beautiful old hymn. What if we were known as that? Another way we can respond, we stand up for what is right even when you're standing alone. Let me say this. Please stand alone. That sounds really bad, but hear me on this. Stand alone at work this week, at school this week, whatever it is. Stand up for what's right. Be different. Look different. Look like Christ. And standing alone isn't easy. Remember a couple weeks ago when Pastor Wes was here, he told us about David, this little nappy head teenager. And he shows up and here's these hardened warriors in battle, and they're facing this giant, and this giant is saying, come and fight me, and nobody would fight him. These hardened warriors, and here's this annoying little brother who comes in and says, hey, I'll go do it, and he stands up and faces something for God. Stood alone. It was absolutely amazing. Another character in the Bible is Daniel. Daniel's in this time where the king says, and the government said, you cannot pray to your God. You will be killed if you pray to your God. This happens around the world even today. Daniel says, I hear you. Too bad. And he continues to pray. And if you've ever heard the Bible story, he's thrown into these man-eating lions, and he comes out unscathed because God protected him, but he stood alone. And then there's this guy named Moses. We've all heard of Moses, and the first five books of the Bible talk about his life, and God says, go free my people from the government. And he says, no. He says, no, yeah, go. Okay. So he goes, and he stands before Pharaoh. He says, let my people go. And he talks about this story of freedom from slavery because he stood up. What if we were a part of that chain of people in history who stood up for what was right and stood in that gap? And what we stood up and we killed them with kindness. But the difficulty is oftentimes when we stand up, we think, I'm all alone, right? No, none of us like attention. So we just feel like we're on an island and everybody's staring at us and ridiculing us and insulting us, and nobody wants to be the recipient of all of that. But here's the deal. God says, when you call on my name, when you follow me, I give you my Holy Spirit. I give you a part of me. So when we feel like we're standing alone, we're not alone. And that's why we also encourage you to get in a life group. When you're in a life group, you are around a body of people, a small group of people who will love you and support you and stand side by side. And pretty soon we have that mob mentality where it only takes one. David conquered the giant. Pretty soon the whole army's joining him. You be that person to stand alone and watch people follow you for Jesus. The third response in our beatitude is that we remember that our reward is in heaven. Jesus says we're to have an eternal perspective. See, when I think about rewards, here's what I think about. I go to a business, I get a credit card, and it says, sign up for our rewards program, right? Because if you spend $10,000, you get $1 back. Sign up now, right? It's such a great reward. That's what I think about when I think of rewards. But God is saying, no. Think of, there are eternal rewards. Like when we were young and we participated in sports or an activity, we got trophies, we got ribbons, and some of them are really personal, they're really exciting and things, but eventually those will get thrown away or go to Goodwill or something, right? And God is saying, let me give you a reward that will not stop, that will not perish. Have an eternal perspective about what's going on. So when you face persecution, maybe it's very small, maybe it's very significant, whatever it is, you're joining in history with a group of people who have gone before you, a great group of people, and you're joining with people around this world who are standing in kindness and in defense of Jesus Christ. And we're not going to focus on happiness being part of the happening. that happiness is determined by our situation, that happiness, true happiness and purpose is found in Jesus. And Jesus is saying that the challenge for you is to live a holy life. It's not just to make sure you check off the right things to do. It's that your heart and your mind are changed and your life becomes more like him and you pursue holiness through him. Let me encourage you, hopefully, with these words in Romans 12. So here's what I want you to do. God helping you. Take your everyday ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be challenged. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. So let me encourage you to be changed, to live God's way, to be different. That is where you'll find happiness. See, the hard part about the Beatitudes is that's where it ends. Kind of, we feel like it ends on this Debbie Downer moment, you know? Happier, blessed are if you're persecuted. Thanks, Jesus. Kind of this Debbie Downer. But here's the deal. He's talking to the crowds. Remember, we saw it was the start of the sermon. And just a couple of verses later, he talks to the whole masses, and he gives them this incredible encouragement. He says this, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone." So let me say the same thing to you. You are the light of the world. Let your light shine before others. You are the light of the world. So I challenge you to look for happiness in ways that Jesus taught us, not in the pursuit of this world, but you are the light in the darkness of this world. We need to let our light shine to everybody, to stand in truth, stand in kindness, and people will see Jesus. You're not alone. Would you pray with me? Jesus, I'm not going to lie, this was a hard one. I don't really like people making fun of me. I don't like people teasing me, ridiculing me, especially for you, because you are... You're my God. But Jesus, you said that I'll be blessed and have an eternal perspective. God, in the grand scheme of times on this huge string of life, I'm just kind of a drop in the hat. So if I think that my life is just based on all these events that happen to me, and I don't have a perspective that maybe my great-grandchildren, great-great-great-great-great, all of these people who come after me will be impacted. God, help me to keep my eyes focused on you and to understand that stuff I'm going through, that stuff I'll experience is for you. You say you'll be blessed. And I understand that blessing and happiness isn't found in more stuff. It's not necessarily found in my comfort. Jesus, this one's not an easy one. Would you help me this week? Maybe to make myself uncomfortable? God, thank you for the opportunity to come together with all these amazing men and women and the people they represent. And God, as we go into a long weekend, you commanded us to rest. And we've learned through science what you've already put in place, that rest is good for our bodies and our minds and our souls. I pray this long weekend that would do that. That we take the time to rest physically and mentally, but also spiritually. We'd see what it is you have for us next, whether it's after this year of high school, after college, retirement, a new job, new kid, whatever. Help us to stand in truth and respond in kindness this week and understand and try and keep in perspective that when people criticize and insult me, they're actually doing that to you. Jesus, forgive me when I fail you. Thank you for your grace and your mercy that is new every single day for me. So God, we give you this day. We give you our week and our hearts. We love you. Help us to love you that much more today. Amen.